south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
You know, here in Latin America, you will hear the term El Campo all the time. E-L-C-A-M-P-O, El Campo. Literal translation, the camp, actually means out in the boonies. The countryside. So last Sunday, I was out in El Campo at one of those famous quince años parties, you know, 15-year birthday party for a girl who's just transitioned from child to adult. That's the theory, anyway. So anyway, I'm at this party, sitting on the front porch with a bunch of people, reggaeton music blasting, because, you know, anyone who's 15 years old in Latin America, their number one priorities are TikTok and reggaeton. Sheesh, how revolting is that? So I'm sitting on the porch looking at a couple of houses across the street. It's the boonies, so there's lots of yard. Houses are spaced quite a bit apart. So I'm looking at a vacant house right across the street. I notice there's some construction going on, some blocks stacked up in front of the place, and big pile of sand, some roofing materials. No one's there working because it's Sunday, but I did notice two thin wires, electrical wires, split off from the power lines on the street going to this house, and I knew something was wrong with that picture because you never have just two wires split off from a power pole. You have three, a ground and two hot wires, and across two hot wires, it's 220, and from the ground to any one of those two hot wires is 110 volts. And practically everywhere in the Western world, when you're hooked up to the power correctly, you have 220 volts for big appliances. 110 for everything else, and for that you need three wires. Well, this house had only two wires coming off the pole, so that meant it's only 110, because I saw one was ground, the middle wire, and one was a hot wire. And I said to the guy sitting next to me on the porch, a guy about 25, I said, that electrical connection over there, that's not right. I said, how is he allowed to do that? He said, he's not. I was pointing to the wires coming off the pole. He says, yeah, well, he's stealing power. He said it so nonchalantly, too, like, yeah, he's stealing power, so what? More power to him. Yuck, yuck. I said, really? How long's that been going on? He said that house has been vacant for a couple of years. And 3 or 4 months ago, some guy bought it. Now he's remodeling it. He's going to rent it out. So he had someone come over and rig up some power. I said, who does that? Who has the balls to climb up a pole and tap in illegally? He said, you just call an electrician, and he'll usually know someone who works for the power company, and they'll come out and hook it up on a Sunday. Then I said, well, then why don't you have free power in this house? Why doesn't everyone have free power? And he said, because every once in a while, they'll make a sweep of the neighborhoods, and they'll spot guys who are stealing free power and clip the wires. And then you'll have to go down to the power company and apply for service, and that'll take 2 weeks. And nobody wants to be without power in their house for 2 weeks. And I said, that's it? They'll just clip the wires and not find the guy or call the cops? Stealing power is a crime, right? At least where I come from. He said, there's a chance you'll get fined, but it's a tiny fine. But that usually only happens, he says, if you get caught stealing power more than once. Then, he said, if you're a repeat offender and you call the electric company to get legitimate power, they'll usually fine you, but it won't be much. They'll know you're a repeat offender by virtue of the fact that you have to show your cédula, your national ID, to get a legitimate service installed. But, he said, almost no one ever gets fined. Nor do the cops ever get involved or show up. Because even if you get caught tapping in illegally more than once, you can always have someone else in your family call up the electric company and get it installed legitimately with their cédula. If you get caught, there are always ways around it, he said. Then I said, so that guy across the street, he's had free power 3 or 4 months now? He said, yeah. And all the neighbors know and nobody cares? He said, no, they don't care. Why should they? I said, how come? You'd think some of the neighbors would be jealous he's getting his power for free and they got to pay. He said, yeah, maybe, but everyone's got some member of the family stealing power somewhere. so it's best not to stir the pot. He said it's sort of an unwritten law. No one would ever think to call the electric company and report on their neighbor. You don't want to make an enemy out of them because, you know, people talk. Now, here's the irony of it all. From in my chair, sitting on that porch, I was looking across the street at the house adjacent to the one that was stealing power. I could see the legitimate three wires tapped into the transformer on the power pole. I could see those three electric power lines swooping into the neighbor's yard, attached to a concrete pole with a meter on it, connected to the absolute latest high-tech version of a smart meter. So here, there's a guy stealing power for months on end, and the guy right next door is hooked up legitimately with a damn smart meter. Funny thing, though, since I was an electrical engineer in a former life, I do notice those things. By the way, that's about the fourth or fifth time since I've been down here that I've seen people stealing power up front and personal and getting away with it for months, even years at a time. First time I personally experienced it was when a girl I knew opened a bar and restaurant. The place used to be a mini mart. She asked me to check out the fuse box and circuit breakers because the wiring looked like a rat's nest when they pulled down the drop ceiling. Turns out whoever built that place maybe 10 or 15 years earlier had bypassed one side of the meter so that half the electricity in one of the main rooms was metered and the other half that served the rest of the place was free. So then you might ask, what did she do when I told her about all that? Well, she just left it that way, told no one, and hooked up all her freezers and heavy current users to the electrical outlets that were not metered. And you know, some months later, after she'd got the business going, I asked her how much her electric bill was. Now remember, it's a bar and restaurant now. She told me about $15 a month. I said, wow, that's pretty slick, but aren't you worried that's going to raise some red flags down an electric company? She said, no, why should it? And all the while I was thinking, if you lived up in the States and tried to pull that off, you'd get a huge fine. They'd probably smear you in the papers and you might even do some time. Now, admittedly, that little scenario happened some years back, maybe 10 or 12 years ago. And you'd think, with electric companies throughout Latin America switching over to smart meters, which I hate, by the way, and refuse to let them install in my place, well, you'd think they'd be tightening up on power stealing. They'd catch people when they put those new smart meters in, right? I guess not. My Sunday quinceañeros experience kind of blew that theory. Crazier yet. About 3 months ago, a lady friend of mine called me up. She moved to a new apartment in a middle-class part of town, a big city neighborhood, decent neighborhood, not any place I'd like to live, but adequate. She's paying around $300 a month. Well, she knew I had some skills being an electrical engineer in a past life, and she asked me if I'd check out her hot water heater. She had one of those electric instantaneous hot water heaters. Just a tiny little box connected to 220 volts. They've got them all over the place down here, mostly in new construction. And in Europe, they're practically everywhere. Turns out almost no one uses one of those big water tank hot water heaters. The kind that most people in the States use. Not here in Latin America, anyway. So I went over to her apartment and checked out that whole house water heater. And I asked her, just for info, you know, small talk, how much she pays for electricity every month. She said, zero, nothing. I said, you mean it's included in the rent? And she put her finger up to her lips like she was telling a secret and said, don't tell anyone. The electricity in this place is not metered. Meanwhile, the apartment building right next door, you can see the panel outside near the sidewalk has six smart meters, nicely arranged in a perfect row. All the while I'm thinking, how is that possible? Again, I think it's due to two factors. Number one, lazy-ass slugs working for a quasi-government bureaucracy. And secondly, the fact that Latinos are just not into the details. Though certainly into cutting corners, all right. Of course, when I say that mixed company, especially around gringos and expats, some people get pissed off at me. They think I'm being classist or racist. Though if someone gives me that certain look or makes a face, I just might say something like the following. Look, for example, if you won a free trip to the International Space Station and you had your choice of transportation, number one, in a rocket designed by Elon Musk's SpaceX team, or a rocket 100% designed and built by Mexicans in Mexico, I rest my case. By the way, I read a book that just came out a biography of Elon Musk. Very fascinating. Oh, and it's no BS, a no pull your punches look at him, too. He let the author walk around with him side by side like a shadow for 2 years. Man, you just wouldn't believe the life this guy had. A very tough life, too. He was not, contrary to popular belief, born with a silver spoon. Not at all. By the way, he was mercilessly bullied as a kid because he was nerdy and on the autistic spectrum, and you know how kids can be. So bullies at school beat the hell out of him weekly, broke his nose 3 times. His dad beat the shit out of him, too. His dad also beat his mom in front of him. The guy had a terrible childhood. You just won't believe the life this guy had. For one, did you know that Elon Musk has 11 kids? Only 2 of them, though, conceived naturally, the rest by surrogate mothers. Such an eccentric life. So then why am I bringing this up here when it's not our theme at all, you know, living in Latin America? Well, it's because now that he owns Twitter, he calls it X now. People in the media, you know, are all over Elon Musk dissing him for getting involved in that. Well, you got to hear this. A little excerpt from that book explaining what he found when he entered the physical building that housed Twitter in San Francisco for the first time. As you'll see, it's reason 3,456 through 4,440 why you just got to get the hell out of Dodge while you still can. It starts, Elon Musk seemed amazed as he wandered around Twitter's headquarters, a 10-story Art Deco former merchandise mart built in 1937. It had been renovated by Twitter in a techno-hip style with coffee bars, yoga studios, fitness rooms, and game arcades. The cavernous 9th-floor cafe, with a patio overlooking San Francisco City Hall, served free meals 24/7, ranging from boutique artisanal hamburgers to vegan salads. Signs on all the restrooms said, "Gender diversity is welcome here." And as Musk poked through the cabinets filled with stashes of Twitter merchandise, he found T-shirts emblazoned with the words, "Stay Woke," which Musk then waved around as an example of the mindset that had infected the company. In the second floor conference room, which Musk commandeered as a base camp, there were long wooden tables filled with earthy snacks and 5 types of artisanal water, including bottles from Norway and cans of energy drink called Liquid Death. The first Twitter employee to speak with him was Leslie Berland, who was chief marketing and people officer, until she was fired by Musk shortly after. She said to him, "We are definitely very high empathy here, very caring about inclusion and diversity. Everyone needs to feel safe here." She said the company has instituted a permanent work-from-home option and allows a mental day of rest each month. Care is taken not to cause any employee discomfort. The buzzword at the company was psychological safety. On hearing this, Elon Musk let loose a bitter laugh. He preferred his buzzword, hardcore. Discomfort, he believed, was a good thing. It was a weapon against complacency. He told the Twitter management staff that vacations, aromatherapy, acupuncture, meditation, flower smelling, workplace shaman sessions, and days of mental rest were not his thing. So let that sink in. Elon Musk, a man of action, within 3 weeks after he bought the company, he fired 75% of the Twitter workforce. All right, me, Johnny here. That's just a little excerpt from that Elon Musk biography that just came out. Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, and I'll send you a copy. All right, now, speaking of extreme wokeness up by you, here's reason 4,231. Why it's absolutely imperative to pull that trigger to start the process to get the hell out of Dodge. Are you ready for this? According to last week's Chicago Tribune, right on cue, the woke Illinois state legislature has passed a bill that mandates that all publicly traded companies now must have at least one woman and one African American on their board of directors. And thus, in order to make clear to corporations that the state of Illinois has taken over the power to determine the makeup of corporate boards, a fine for failure to diversify their boards in this manner has been set at $300,000 per infraction. And we thought California, New York, and Washington were the most insanely woke states in the union. Which begs that ever-nagging question, how's your Plan B coming? Oh, and one more thing. During last week's show, I asked the question, are you still drinking bottled water? Are you still buying it and not making your own? What's wrong with you? How can you not be concerned about all those hormones and forever plastics and micro and nanoplastics that are now showing up in nearly every single animal and human being alive? Well, it turns out, you know, bottled water is one of the biggest industries in the world. Do you know who the three biggest bottled water producers are? Number one, Nestle's. They produce bottled water under various names in 40 different countries. And get this, Nestle's parent company also owns Pellegrino water, you know, that nice Italian water in glass bottles. That fools you into thinking it's healthy, right? Makes you think it's coming from some unadulterated virgin spring high up in the Italian Alps somewhere. But it ain't. Yep, it's a good old Nestle's product. And did you know that Nestle's parent company also owns, are you ready for this? Perrier water. All right, good to know. Second biggest producer of bottled water under various brands? That well-known iconic health food conglomerate, Pepsi-Cola. And trailing close behind in third place? That other health food industry giant, Coca-Cola. What a revolting development. Just saying. All right, moving on. You know, a lot of people think that this show, The Expat Files Living in Latin America, sort of appeals to the retirement crowd. That is, gringos and expats, gonna-bes and wannabes, the over 50 crowd. Maybe even the way over 50 crowd. Well, one thing's true. Those are the kind of people that usually have saved enough dough, that is, have enough of a nest egg to get the hell out of Dodge. Well, they're still mobile before they end up in a nursing home or in a wheelchair. Well, that's mostly true. Most expats I know who've gotten the hell out have gone through some trauma up in the States. Divorces, lawsuits, IRS audits, you name it. Though there are lots of young adults, even adolescents, who are looking to get the hell out of Dodge too. Turns out at most of my expat insider seminars, there have been some 20-something guys and gals too, though some tagging along with their parents. Fact is, I've had seminar attendees as young as 15 years old, hanging with one or more of their parents to be sure, but still, surprisingly enough, on the same page as we are ready and willing to learn. Not only that, I continuously get emails from young adults and even late teen adults who are just not on board with what's happening in the world around them. Most of those guys and gals admitting that they feel like they don't fit in at all with their own age group. They feel like outsiders. Now, I don't know about you, but even as a little kid going through grade school and high school, I never quite felt like I fit in either. And at that age, when you feel like you're different, you're thinking the world's okay and there's something wrong with you. And in my case, that was probably true. You know, I hear that story from expats all the time. They say as they were growing up, going through high school, college, whatever, they felt like they were out of place too. Especially some of my nerdy engineering buddies. Lots and lots of those guys, like Elon Musk, got their asses kicked by bullies as kids. Now, as for me, if I hadn't have played in a rock band in my formative years, I certainly would have been bullied and had my ass kicked a lot too. But you see, when you're in a rock band, even if you're a nerd, it adds a kind of undeserved sheen to your social status that puts you in good standing with the bullies, or at least scales you down on their list of victims. Another thing in my favor was that the drummer in my band in junior high was a well-known Irish hooligan who liked to brawl. So if someone messed with me, they'd have to mess with him. And his Irish brothers, and man, could they kick ass. Which caused me no end of grief, because when I had to fire the guy for a better drummer some years later, I thought for sure he was going to take his wrath out on me. Luckily, that didn't happen. He sort of knew he sucked, and the clock was ticking, so he bowed out gracefully. Well, almost gracefully, anyway. But I digress as usual. Oh yeah, we were talking about young adults, even teenagers, writing me emails laced with discontent, who feel they're not fitting in with kids their own age. They say they've got nothing or little in common with their peers. Even saying they feel like old souls stuck in young bodies and have somehow come to the conclusion, even at that young age, that they've got to get a Plan B going and get the hell out of Dodge eventually too. Like, for example, a while back came this email from JB in Little Rock. He says, I'm 25 years old and just saw that old dinosaur rock group, The Zombies, yesterday. You might remember their hit records, like tell her no and time of the season. He says, I know I'm only 25, but I'm so grateful for the privilege of having been there and seen them as an opening act for Brian Wilson of the Beach Boys. The voices were just as mesmerizing now as they sound on their 60-year-old vinyl discs that my dad still plays around the house. He says, I have a huge appreciation for music of that era. I feel like an old soul in a young body. He says, I love and appreciate those days when lyrics mattered and when musicians actually picked up their instruments and created real music. He says, I find it so hard to meet people my age that love and genuinely appreciate those bygone eras of real music. To me, those 60s and 70s bands are amazing and I can never get enough of them. And the only people of my age who feel the same are ones whose parents played that old music around the house when they were growing up. Kids who never had that experience will never know the beauty of it. In the end, Johnny, you are so right. Reggaeton and rap suck the life out of your brain and psyche. He said, I'd love to come to your February seminar if I can get the time off work. I've been trying to find someone in my age group to come along so as to get the double occupancy discount that you offer. If you find a single person willing to share a double room, please let me know. Signed, LB, Little Rock, Arkansas. All right, thanks for that, LB. Yeah, the Zombies, they became Argent, had that hit, Hold Your Head Up. By the way, LB raises a good point. If you come to the seminar as a single and are looking to save some money, in fact, $1,000 off the price of the seminar, you can do that by sharing a room, double occupancy. Seems like almost every seminar I've ever done, we've been able to hook people up that way. Oh, and of course, as far as repeat offenders, we always have repeat offenders. When they come down for a second or third or fourth seminar, yep, that's right, we've had people come down and repeat the seminar experience up to four different times now. Well, as usual, as is our policy, repeat offenders always get $1,000 off the regular price. So remember, once again, to get on that early bird waiting list for that seminar I'm planning for a week in February 2024, just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. We'll put you on that list and keep you posted. Oh, and here's a little update on the Guatemalan situation. You know, they've had roadblocks going a week now. Stores closed, gasoline stations shut down. I'm telling you, man, it's the same old. Happens in every Latin country. Hell, in the last year or so, it happened in Panama, Ecuador, Chile, Argentina. It always seems to happen right around election time when there's a runoff. The losers take to the streets and claim election fraud. And by the way, they're always right about that, because you know what Stalin said? Famous last words, too. He said, doesn't matter who votes or how many people vote. What matters is who counts the votes. So there's always election fraud. Now, where have we heard that before? And here's the kicker. In any third world election, the U.S. and its alphabet agencies have a favorite candidate. A candidate that'll play ball with the U.S. or one that will play ball better than the other candidates. And if he wins, the U.S. will praise him up in the media. He'll be the new hero. The new third world reformer slash savior. Of course, he'll be nothing of the sort. As the U.S. shovels money his way, all he has to do is make sure his country's representatives vote along U.S. lines at the United Nations, sign the right international treaties, and make the right trade deals. But when the sweaty masses vote for the wrong guy, the guy the U.S. doesn't want in office because he just won't play ball, that's when you see very, very organized street protests. Groups of people wearing the same t-shirts, waving the same flags, toting posters with sayings that look way too professional. Food trucks arriving, handing out freebies at the protest sites. Porta potties popping up where you'd never seen them before. You have to ask yourself, how does that stuff get organized on a countrywide basis in just 24 or 48 hours? When on other days when shit happens, if you call the cops because you suspect there's a thief in your garage or a chicken coop, let's say, a cop might not show up till tomorrow or maybe never. The thing is, the U.S. and her alphabet agencies, that twisted Soros and his foundations and that asshole Bill Gates, have their fingers in the political pies and tentacles in all the NGOs here in Latin America, in every country. Now, I just was made aware, and you can look this up. It turns out in 2016, an NGO called Caymanix received $37,390,000 grant from USAID for its youth and gender justice project in Guatemala. What the f***? By the way, you may not have heard of USAID, but it's got big buildings in every third world country, always close to the U.S. Embassy. Why? Because it's a CIA intelligence gathering front. Look it up. You'll see that's absolutely true. So anyway, they gave $37 million to an NGO named Chemonix in Guatemala. That money, of course, used to promote LGBTBS and gender equality, amongst other things. Yep, how do you like them apples? Your LGBT tax dollars at work in Guatemala. So then who is this NGO, Chemonix International? Well, I'm looking it up now. It says founded in 1975. Chemonix, though it sounds like a company that actually produces something, as its name would suggest, like chemicals, produces nothing, and is, in actuality, a private international development firm based in Washington, D.C. Chemonix is a leading global sustainable development firm with more than 6,000 experts placed around the globe. 90% of us working in communities that reflect diversity, et cetera, et cetera. So you've got all these pompous New World Order assholes shoveling money into the hands of corrupt politicos and pressure groups through these Soros, Gates, and U.S. government-funded operations. And of course, all those affiliated with Gates and Soros, etc., are doing it out of the goodness of their black, you will own nothing and like it, little hearts. They're not looking to affect any political or social change now, are they? Nah. Anyway, bottom line, as mentioned in the last show, I've got no doubt in my mind that within a week or two, Guatemala will be completely back to normal. Everything up and running again. As far as the gringos and expats are concerned, doesn't matter what corrupt group of assholes are in power. Little will have changed as far as expats are concerned, though most gringos and expats could be inconvenienced for a week or two. It's just one of the things you have to put up with and tolerate if you live anywhere in Latin America. Especially when elections are rolling around, there will be protests and roadblocks. Fact is, just a few minutes ago, I checked in with Captain Mango, who, as you longtime listeners know, is running a coffee plantation in Guatemala. I said, how are those protests affecting you and all the gringos down there? He said, well, I'm at work. I got my crew working here. He said, the roads are pretty empty because some of the gas stations don't have gas, and there are some food shortages if you shop at the grocery stores. Captain Mango is certainly not going to starve. He says food's falling off the trees, even rotting on the ground. So he says it's not much crimping his style.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.